Samson, a man so powerful, they say that he could slay a lion with his bare hands. Much like his biblical namesake, Samson Pumabout's life story is one of incredible strength and resilience. Raised in the shadows of Salt Lake City, Samson's early years were marred by the allure of gang life. It would take a brush with law enforcement and the tragic loss of a dear friend before he would confront the harsh realities of where his choices were taking him. He decided to trade the streets for the cage, channel his energy into mixed martial arts. Samson would rise through the amateur ranks and into the pros through blood, sweat, and relentless dedication. He transformed himself into a professional fighter and tested the waters as an entrepreneur. Samson's ultimate goal is to represent his Lao heritage on the international stage.
All right. Hey, welcome to another episode of C4 Podcast, Southeast Asian Athlete Achievement Through Adversity. My name is Coach Andetka. I'm here with my co-host, John Messina. And tonight, we have an amazing guest. If you haven't already, please like, share, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Follow us on Facebook, IG, Lao American Sports. Visit our website, LaoAmericanSports.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, you know, please message us, let us know. All right. So without further ado, let me introduce I'm going to let John, my co-host, introduce our guest.
Yeah. So a couple things before I get into the interview here with Mr. Sampson. First, keep those recommendations coming in. We're looking for more either athletes, other individuals that have overcome adversity, or just people doing cool things going against the grain. We got a really exciting recommendation the other day. We'll be scheduling that interview for next month. So please keep those recommendations coming in. And with that, we wanted to also give a quick shout out to the Sung Kum Lao podcast, which is produced by the Georgia Asia Times. Stay tuned for some collaborations with them. You could find them on Spotify. We'll be working with their host, Elizabeth B. Vichatape, and the crew over there to do some collaborations. Exciting podcast. Check them out. They interview a lot of cool guests. Interviewed AJ Vongpachon recently, and other really cool people doing some good things. So with that, today's guest, Samson Pumabout. Samson, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, start at the beginning, tell us a little bit about what you know of your family coming from Laos and your childhood.
My name's Samson Pumabout. I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah, born and raised. My family came from Laos. They migrated about around the 60s, 70s out here. I started, I grew up in a good family. You know, it wasn't like crazy at all. You know, but wasn't from like, you know, a rich family at all. But of course, you know, we had to come up from like the poor side of the family. You know, and so we kind of had to grow up through that side. And you know, just my parents always being gone, working and everything, making sure that they could provide for us while we're growing up. You know, there was always gone. So I was always, me and my sister was always just kind of like playing around, doing our thing, being kids. You know, we had a good kid life and all that too. And, but we didn't have our parents there much just because of like, you know, they had to provide and go work for us. So, but yeah, other than that, you know, I started hitting like sixth grade, getting fights and then everything, you know, and then where I grew up was like around Midvale, Utah. Back then, it was like a lot of gangbanging around the Latinas. The Latinos, and that's what I kind of grew up around, was a lot of those Mexican gangs. As I grew up, you know, I just kept on fighting, just kind of went to school, fought, you know, just done my thing. I was the only Asian actually that was around that whole area, you know, and then. Going around, you know, I still had a good life. It wasn't bad at all. And then I was just a bad kid. You know, we all grow up, you know, going trying to be kids. But at the end, we end up doing some stupid choices as we grow up, right? So, but yeah, after that, you know, I kind of got into gangs and everything towards my sophomore year. You know, I wrestled. I did good. I wrestled in ninth grade and all that. 9th and 10th grade, got out of got into like a little trouble during those times around the sophomore year, And then, you know, I had families that was like just growing up in the hood around the West Valley City area called Lake Park. And they my sister had a boyfriend and had kids with them, and they were kind of like our family. So they turned out to be our family. And, you know, that's how, you know, it is when it comes to family. Like, nobody messes with our family. And that's kind of how I saw it as this, and being around them. And so just when I heard them, you know, getting into fights with these other people that I didn't even know, and they asked me to go fight, and one of my friends asked me to go fight with them, you know, over at the races. And so I kind of just started doing that with them, and then, you know, started hanging out with them more and more. And then all of a sudden we have this like little family gang of everything. So, cause like, you know, my stepbrothers were you know, part of the gang. My in-laws are part of the gang. And so I kind of just, you know, was hanging around that whole area. And that's how I just got into the gang area. And not only that, you know, I was actually going to school with a friend and everything. And turns out he was from like the other side of the gang. And all of a sudden, you know, just started hating me out of nowhere, because I didn't know the reason why. But then all of a sudden I knew why and everything. And then so we kind of had things going, and then we saw him, and we got in a fight, you know. And then all of a sudden, you know, we jumped him over at the mall and everything, and then they retaliated. And when they retaliated, they came shooting at us and everything. And that's when one of my friends that died. And so, you know, I had to drag him, you know, trying to save him. Last words he said was say, you know, help me, whatever, and gushing out blood and all that. But, you know, and that's kind of where it kind of got worse. And so, you know, I wanted to retaliation and all that. But, you know, I kind of got into more deeper of the gang. And so I was like, all right, let's just, now these guys are my enemies. And so, you know, it is when we go, you know, they retaliate, we go after them, they come back, and, you know, it's just back and forth thing. So yeah, I started doing gangs, got all that, and then just kind of been one of the guys to always be, you know, wanted on the streets and everything, just because of the actions that we were doing, you know, fighting on the streets, doing everything, doing what we do as kids, you know, as a group of kids, just getting into trouble. But yeah, and then after that, you know, I started getting into drugs, which is, well, not like marijuana, right? So I wasn't into the deep of the drugs. I wasn't into like meth or cocaine or none of that. Never done none of that in my life. You know, I was a smart guy to not do none of that stuff. So, but marijuana, I was like, it was my only thing that I was really into. And so we started hustling. So we started hustling back then, and then started traveling it across the United States, and then I actually got caught for that too. So and then from there, you know, I got caught. After I got caught for like 55 pounds and everything, I kind of just like said, like, you know, I was done with my life. This is when, you know, this is like years later and all that too. So, and I'm just like, you know, I'm kind of done with all that, you know, especially after, you know, getting caught with the gun on school grounds and all that. They try to put me away for like until like 21 and all that. And then I was just like, man, I'm getting into some deep, deep trouble now. So just right as I turned 18, I just went straight to, you know, the adults, you know, and then got out, tried to change my life again and everything. Luckily I had like some good law officers, you know, on my side, just trying to help me change. And they saw that I was trying to change, but it was just hard to change. You know, I tried to use militaries and everything to try to get away, to just get away, but they denied me for like some, just because of my background. You know, I didn't have a crazy background, and it was just only a theft, you know, misdemeanor. And so they denied me for all those. And so I kind of went back into the gang banging side. And then that's when I went to drugs, or not selling weed, you know. And so, and then after that, so driving it across the United States, that's when I got caught. And then I was like, man, I needed a change in my life. And so I had my son, and I said, I had my son. Once I got caught, I got out, went back home, took care of my Chargers that I had back in Utah, and was like, you know, I saw my son and that came to see me in jail, and I was like, man, that's the last time I'm ever gonna probably have him see me come through the window, you know, trying to come through the window and trying to can't even come in. But yeah, that's, and then I got out, you know, I kind of changed my life from there. And then so I saw somebody on MMA, you know, I was just sitting in my room and wondering, like, man, what am I gonna do? I couldn't get into the military. I couldn't do anything. I got denied throughout the Navy, the Marines, just because of, I had 7 misdemeanors, which wasn't even serious at all. You know, and think in mind, I was never a felon, you know. So even though I got, and then, you know, with my charges for the 55 pounds, I beat the case, actually. So, yeah, I beat the case by them doing an illegal search on us. Because, you know, I told them that they couldn't search the car. And so they did an illegal search and, you know, I beat the case. I just went to court once, and then they called me and said, you never have to come back again. So I lucked out on that one, you know, even being with the public defender. So I was lucky on that one. And then after that, I kind of saw this guy on TV doing MMA, showing that he was, you know, he was doing so much for his family, and the MMA changed his life. And then not only that, I wrestled in high school and junior high. And so I was like, that was the only thing that kept me out of trouble. And so I thought that this would help. And so I, you know, my buddy went to go do some MMA rounds and stuff over at the gym. And then I was like, hey, maybe I'll go try it out. Try it as a hobby. I just need another hobby, you know, to keep my mind off the streets and making sure I don't go back to where I was, you know, before. So I tried it out, and then all of a sudden, you know, I started liking it, you know. And so keep on, while I'm trying doing this whole MMA stuff and getting back into it and getting finding it, and then I figured out, you know, man, this is what I want to do, you know. And so I started doing it more and more, started training. I didn't think I was gonna fight. I said I was gonna try a fight in like probably 2 years, you know, but the amount of training that I was putting it in, I ended up fighting in like 8 months. And I was like, okay, cool, I won. And I won my first one. I was like, okay, all right, let's just keep going. So I kept on going, kept on winning, kept on going, kept on winning. Went on to 7-0 as an amateur. And then went off to a pro, you know. And so I'm 5-3 as a pro now. But yeah, so ever since then, ever since I stepped foot on the mats, I never ever got pulled over, went back to jail. Because we would always get pulled, every time we got pulled over, like around and exited our area, we would always get pulled over. It doesn't matter what it was for, but they'll find something to pull you over. And then I would always go to jail, you know. And so like I have all these mugshots of me just going to jail for no reasons, just for like traffic tickets or whatever. But ever since then, I never went back to jail.
Stepping back really quick before we jump deep into the MMA. So the you said some police officers kind of helped you out. Were these like local Salt Lake City, West Valley City type police, or the people in the jail? Or let's talk about that a little bit.
It was kind of like, you know, always pushing me to not get in trouble, because he saw the good in me, you know, and he just kept on playing, you know, what am I doing? You know, always pulling me aside and like, what are you doing? And, you know, this life isn't for you. And, you know, you should be doing a lot better. And so he kind of kept on, you know, that's, and he always saw me because he was part of the gang unit. And he was a detective for all that stuff. And he was on the case for like, you know, all the guys that died and all, or he was on the case that got shot next to me and all that. And so, yeah, he always just knew what I had. I was, you know, knew what I had. And so he always kind of talked me through it and everything and got me out, got out. You know, got me into the right way. And so good. Yeah, so he was a good officer, one of the good ones, because most of them, man, it was they weren't as nice as the other ones. Yeah. So but yeah. And then ever since then, you know, and not only that, I had a probation officer who always knew that I was always good too. And so she kind of kept me going, and you know, she was my juvenile probation officer too, and she kept on telling me, you know, I'm better than what I what I should be doing right now. You know, I wrestle and all that. And so, and then I like, yeah, I kind of know that. And then it just kept on putting me, I kept on trying to change, but always found my way back onto the gangbanging side. And then and so on, just because of like the enemies and doing all this and all that. But, yeah. You know, somehow, yeah, like when I, like I said, when I first stepped on those mats, I told myself I just kept on training and I just kept on training and training. And then putting so much right into training is that, you know, I took a fight 8 months later. And then so, yeah, that's kind of how I got into the MMA and told myself that, you know, this is going to change my life. And so it did. But, yeah, so it's pretty crazy. And then, yeah, like I say, I kept on winning and winning, and then I kept on going. And then, like I said, I had a ex-girlfriend who was always there to support it too. And she always knew that, you know, I was potential of all that too. And so I kind of kept on going, fighting for them and all that, and my kid and her and all that. And then, you know, throughout that whole time, it was like, man, it's, you know how it is when a fighter fight with a fighter's life. It's hard for them to manage their whole life with the financials and everything. And not only that, I was on child support and everything. And so I couldn't afford much or anything. And so I kept on, you know, fighting and, you know, every time. And then I was only making like $100 a week over at, you know, at a restaurant. Every time I would do that, I'm like, man, this is like I would make, my check would be all the way down. And all of a sudden I would only make $100. So I'm like, man, this is not even worth it, you know? So I kept on fighting. I was like, this is going to change my life. And then, yeah, it totally changed it. And then, you know, I had a few good runs and all that. I went as far as, you know, UFC contacting me and everything, but, you know, with poor management, I wasn't able to hit to the rings and everything and all that too. But, so yeah, and then I found jiu-jitsu. You know, jiu-jitsu was kind of my thing too. And so I was like, man, I think I want to compete on stage with jiu-jitsu, because, you know, MMA you only could do for so long, right? But jiu-jitsu you could do for a lifetime. You know, it doesn't matter what age you are, it doesn't matter where you're from, who you are, whatever it is. You know, jiu-jitsu, you could always do jiu-jitsu. And then that's where I kind of kept on going with the jiu-jitsu side and all that too. And then not only that, we kept on pushing and training. And then that's when I actually got a call from Eddie Bravo too, and saying that, hey, you want to compete on the first Combat Jiu-Jitsu World? I was like, yeah, I'm down with that. So I was really excited that he hit me up on that too. So, and then not only that, you know, just going through a lot of that stuff, I just kind of, you know, after being, you know, losing the long-term relationship about 8 years, and then lost my dad, you know, 2 months later, I kind of fell off. And so that's kind of what got me off of the MMA side, because I had to find something else financially. So I went to barber school, and then I did barber school, and then I've been cutting hair for a long time. So I did barber, open a shop, you know, did that. And then did that for about 5-6 years, and then realized, you know, man, this is holding me up for my own career. Like, it's holding me up for like everything else. And so, you know, it wasn't made, like, I love barbering and everything, and I'm glad I did it. And I love the people that I met, that sat in my chair and I cut the hairs and everything, but it wasn't my passion. And so I kind of fell off the MMA because of it. Because it took up so much of my time trying to make the money and everything. And not only that, you know, I'm really blessed to do it, because it did help me get into business and all that too. So I kind of just started doing business after all that, and doing more business I'm like, I think I need more business within where I love, you know, which is jiu-jitsu and, you know, all that martial arts area. So that was more of my whole, you know, community. and barbing is cool, but it's not, like I said, it's not my passion. My passion is hurting people. You know, I love to hurt people and make friends. Yeah. So yeah, I'd rather do that. And so, yeah, I started a business, and then, which I have a beverage company now. And that's why I started Vegas, because, like, you know, I was always into health and everything, and I always did research on food and beverages, and I drank a lot of water. And so that's where I kind of did the research and everything with water and all that. And I kind of got into the water business, and then knowing that, you know, athletes need water. You know, athletes need energy. Athletes need to understand that, you know, water is everything, and beverages, and understanding energy drinks and all that, right? You know, there's a lot of bad energy drinks out there. And so, you know, we kind of just worked that whole aspect area. And yeah.
So you have, it's called Phase International, right? It's your own brand of, I guess, energy drinks / you know, hydration, rehydration, electrolyte type fluids, right? And are you targeting that at other fighters, the fighting community, or other sports? Kind of what's the target for that business?
Yeah, it's actually kind of everything, you know, but, you know, my community is the you know, martial arts sports and all that. So I target a lot of those guys. They, you know, a lot of them are friends. I'm friends with the, and training partners with all the big guys. Top guys around there, you know. I've trained with some of the biggest guys in the world, and that's kind of my target area, you know. But, you know, we target every, like, musicians and all that too. Mm-hmm. You know, they're it's kind of everything. You know, Phase is like little everything. You know, it's not just about, you know, the beverage. We're not trying to market our beverage to them, but it's more about telling the life story. You know, what's into your next life story, and what's your passion, what's your skills, and what do you love to do and everything, you know? Because if you understand your skill set and knowing how to bring it out and what's your passion, it's just like, you know, what's your next phase of life? You know, what's your next journey? You know, and so, you know, Phase, and that's what Phase is about. It's like, you know, figuring out what's your life, you know? And then that's what I did. It's like, I used my skills. I used my passion. Like, you know, I got into videography. I got into filming, production, and so I do content creation and everything. So I'm content director for Subversive BJJ, which is another promotion that we do and we run. We actually have that show next week too, April 13th. So it's one of the biggest combat jiu-jitsu promotions in the world. And then so we do that, and so. Yeah, so we kind of target everything, man. It's just, you know, what do you want to do? You know, you just believe in yourself and bring it out, you know?
Yeah. So what would you say during your fighting career, what was, like, your proudest moment?
Man, my proudest moment in my fighting career is just, like, you know, being able to win and making sure that, you know, my life has changed because of it. You know, and not only that I'm winning in the cage and winning on the mats or winning wherever, but it's just winning in life, you know, because that's what changed my life. And for me, for it to change my life, that's like successful for me, you know. And instead of going back to the streets, you know, I could have ended up in prison. I could have ended up dead. And so that's just you know, it's just that was my most successful part of my whole life, career, you know. Is changing.
So like, was it like any, like, competitions you won that was your, you know, did you win a title? Was it a match that you had a rivalry against some guy? I mean, what was that moment that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I won, you know, all my MMA pro champion title fights and all that. So, you know, I have three, four title defenses. I can't remember, man. It's been so long. But yeah, those, like, title defenses, you know, winning in jiu-jitsu, you know, coming up to the black belt levels, you know, and, you know, of course the black belts is always the most competitive, but, you know, being able to, you know, even get an invite from Eddie Bravo was, like, one of my most probably you know, one of my greatest feelings I've had, you know, it's because.
So tell us more about Eddie. Tell us more about Eddie Bravo. Like our viewers, we don't like who is Eddie Bravo? I mean, we know Dana White, right? But who is Eddie Bravo? Like what organization did he run? What did he, where's he from?
Yeah. So Eddie Bravo is the head coach for 10th Planet. You know, one of the biggest jiu-jitsu organizations in the whole world, has over, you know, tons of black belts. You can't even name how many black belts he has under him, and how many schools he has. So he has tons of schools all around the world, but he's the head honcho of 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu. So he's known to beat Hoyle Gracie, and he runs combat jiu-jitsu, which is called EBI, and so one of the first palm striking jiu-jitsu organizations in the world. And so that's where we actually implement his rule set into our promotions too. And so so for him to, you know, invite me to the first show, you know, to be on it and compete amongst the other greatest guys in the world too. And that was, you know, it felt very good to be on that show and, you know, making history. And so being on the first show, making history and being invited by him, you know, it felt like a big accomplishment, you know. And then not only that, ever since then, you know, I told myself, you know, I'm going to get better and continue to get better. And so now, you know, as I grew older into the community and just kept on going, now I'm going into PGF, which is one of the newest promotions, but the newest jiu-jitsu promotion leagues in the world. And that's actually going to change the game now. It's going to actually it's going to make jiu-jitsu into a real sport, you know. And so it's ran by my good friend Brandon McCaffrey, you know, one of the big UFC jiu-jitsu commentators, ADCC commentators, EBI commentator, one of the best commentators out there, you know. Also ran by another friend, Zoltan Bathory from Five Finger Death Punch, and one of my other good friends, Keelan Lawyer, Brandon McCaffrey's videographer too. So yeah, I'm happy to be on that show and being invited. And you know, that one's April 21st to the 26th. And those ones, you know, I'm competing against 19 other guys, and man, the people that are on the card, it's some awesome people, you know, like Kyron Gracie, Andy Varela, PJ Barch, some of the top names in the world for sure.
Yeah, what's funny about jiu-jitsu is it was relatively unknown 10 years ago, right? In Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and other than this thing that MMA fighters trained in and brought a little bit into the ring, but now it seems like, is it sort of kind of coming onto its own, taking off? Becoming it's a really, like you said, a real sport that everybody knows about. And
yeah, it actually is, you know, I mean, especially with Dana White getting involved with it and having his own promotion now, you know, yeah. He has he actually has his own promotion, and, you know, it's actually one of the fastest growing sports in the world. So not only that, you know, Laos, the country, the government of Laos, has gotten into it, right? Yep. So it's growing, and you know, and this is what PGF is going to change, one of the whole games in the world.
Yeah, exciting news about that. If you haven't watched the episode with Amitai Ratsambhat, BJJ Laos just successfully officially established a Lao Jiu-Jitsu Federation, which is going to give the country the opportunity to enter athletes in formal Olympic type competitions, you know, around the world, and hopefully in maybe, I don't think it's at this Olympics, but in future Olympics. At the last SEA Games, jiu-jitsu was sort of like an exploratory sport. They added it. You didn't have to have an official federation. It was kind of they were sort of testing the water. The next SEA Games in Thailand, it will be a full-on formal sport, and we're hoping to bring a contingent of BJJ Laos athletes there to make some noise at that thing. So exciting things to come in in that regards. So
yeah, that's, I'm excited too. I'm excited to be on a team and represent the country and show the country what we're all about, you know. And so I'm excited to be on there. Now have you guys done that before already? Before the last SEA Games?
I heard you guys did. So the last SEA Games was the first time they had it. And so Jed Slaman and his brother Timo Slaman both represented Laos. Jed brought home a silver medal. Timo was only 16. You're talking about when you talk martial arts in Asia, I don't think I have to tell anybody, you're going to have some very tough competitors. And so Jed was able to pull off a silver medal. And then Jed also went to the Asian Games in China after that. And he didn't medal there. That was even a whole nother level of competition. You got Korea, Japan, you know, basically the folks that invented the sport there at that one. So that was a tough all, but yeah, it's an up and coming sport. Amitai's doing awesome things with BJJ Laos. So is, you know, the whole Slaman family's involved, Cam Slaman, and we can't announce everything right now, but we're working on some really cool plans, like I said, for the 2025 SEA Games. So stay tuned, hoping to make a big splash there in Thailand with that one. Yeah, well, Ko, we have anything else for Samson?
Oh, well, my first thought when we're gonna have him on was like, how'd you get the name Samson?
Man, okay, so I get the story from my sister, but you know, as Utah, you're known as a Mormon state, right?
So yeah, right.
Everywhere I go, wherever, he's like, where are you from? I'm from Utah. Oh, are you Mormon? No, I'm not. You know, so but it was actually named by a nurse that was Mormon. But so that's because like my parents didn't know what they wanted to name me. So they were, I guess, nurse that told them, you know, why not Samson? I guess, you know, it probably because she was Mormon. So I was like,
So yeah, so you did get your name from a biblical yeah. figure, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. But yeah, I did want to ask if you're, so if you weren't Mormon, were you raised up Buddhist? What were you?
Yeah, I was raised in the, you know, I raised up growing up going to the temple and all that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just did that whole thing with my dad, my mom. And so every single year we just always went to the temple, you know, of course, Laos New Year and all that. So we never did the church thing. We never did none of that stuff. We're just strictly, you know, the temple.
Well, usually like my family, we came over in 75 and we relocated in Lima, Western Ohio, right? And the thing with what we found was that our American sponsors were trying to push, you know, Christianity onto us. You know, so maybe that's something they were doing to be good Christians, you know, support, you know, some family from a third world country. But I felt like, you know, we're here. Let's take you to church. Let's, you know, talk about Jesus, talk about God, you know. And that was kind of hard for me because my family's Buddhist, you know. So I was kind of torn. Like, well, here I'm in school, I'm learning Christianity and Jesus, you know, Easter, Chris, you know, all that stuff. And like at home, I'm Buddhist. So I was like, man, I kind of, you know, I was just wondering, like, did you feel that type of pressure from their sponsors that brought you over to Utah?
Well, he was born here, so.
His family who brought over his mom and dad, sponsors, right?
Yeah. I think that's who they got sponsored by. It was like, I guess, a church or somebody. I'm not sure. I don't know the full story, but that's gotcha. What we grew up exactly the same thing, just like that. As we grew up, you know, I had Mormon friends and everything too. So they was always trying to get me to go to church and trying to get me this. I'm like, I went one time, but I just love the bread and the water.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Other than that, it was like, yeah, we just grew up pretty much into the Buddhist area.
And there was a big enough community, Laotians there, like in Utah?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, there is. There's a, you know, it's only getting bigger, you know. I mean, they built another temple, you know, in West Valley a few years ago, and every single year it's only getting bigger and bigger. So, you know, it's getting
West Valley, is that
next? It's a suburb of Salt Lake. It's kind of by the airport. It's It's gotcha. A lot of manufacturing companies, and I've spent a lot of time there. I'm in manufacturing. A lot of manufacturing companies around that area. So naturally, gotcha. When Lao people came over in, say, the 70s or 80s, right? Those are the kind of jobs they went into. And then there's this whole community there in the West Valley City area. That's been growing because, you know, Utah's, the economy is still strong. There's a lot of jobs. The unemployment rate's low, right? So it's going to continue, I guess, to attract people looking for work. So.
Yep. Yeah. And then, I mean, the community is small enough to where everybody knows each other, but it's growing. It's definitely growing.
Yeah. And with my family, we have a lot of family in Las Vegas, and I used to live out there. There's kind of a connection. They're not that far apart, I guess, at least for the West Coast, Vegas. So there's a lot of you know, people that go back and forth and stuff like that. So, well, cool.
Yeah.
Well, man, what are your long-term plans, Samson? I mean, you're going to keep fighting for, you got a ways to go with your fighting career, but where do you see yourself long-term when you have to hang up the fighting hat one day?
Well, I mean, we'll see where I go with the MMA. I wanted to get at least one more fight with the MMA, you know, just depending on how my neck feels. But jiu-jitsu wise, you know, I'm going to keep on going until I could never walk again, you know, but I don't think it's never going to stop with jiu-jitsu, you know, because why stop jiu-jitsu when it's your life, you know? So, but in long terms, you know, I mean, my business is built on the community and built within the community. So, you know, and then of course I run a promotion with my buddies and my crew, Subversive BJJ. Yeah. And so, you know, that's never ending too. And so we're always running something. And then not only that, Brandon McCaffrey and Zoltan and those guys are my friends. And so I do some like content, social media creation for those guys and for the PGF. And so, you know, I'm very blessed and, you know, worked hard to make sure my career base is within the jiu-jitsu community. And so, you know, my long-term is to, you know, make sure my company grows. And, you know, by the time my company grows, I want to be able to, you know, live free and financially free and being able to change other people's lives within the community also and try to guide them and brand them and everything too, but also build students too. You know, I still coach and help some of the students where we're at my gym and everything too, to, you know, teach them about branding themselves and learning how to make sure that you get out there and continue to do what you want to do, you know, because a lot of the athletes are just athletes, you know, and there's two differences between pro athletes and an athlete, right? An athlete, they just train. They just, that's all they do. That's all they know. You know, they only know how to train, sleep, eat, wake up, go train, right? A pro athlete, they know how to brand themselves. So they, you know, not only that, they just train. They know how to come up with a brand name for themselves. They know how to market themselves. They know how to make videos, content creation. They know how to make sure they grow their followings and everything. But not only that, but they know how to make and build their relationships and network themselves to other people out there, like companies. And so that's a professional. And so when you're able to learn all that and network and build good relationships with other corporate owners, they're going to want to take care of you and want to believe in you. And so they're going to want to sponsor you. And so that's what a professional athlete does. And so and that's what I've always done was always learning how to try to brand myself. And cause you know, remember fighter, like MMA fighters and martial art guys are broke. And so how are you going to do anything without any money? Right. You got to get sponsors. And so by you learning how to do all that and making sure your network is there and it's right and you're doing what you're doing for the companies and sponsors, that only builds on more for you, you know. And so I've worked with some, you know, big companies out there like Lululemon. I used to be a brand ambassador for them. I was the first Laos Lululemon ambassador, but martial arts too and jiu-jitsu person. Drink Element, you know, the drink salt, the salt, whatever, you guys ever had those. And then, and so just tons of companies out there that I've worked with, you know, and I just kind of built that within myself to learn how to brand myself and make sure that I'm that professional athlete, learning about business and everything too. So that's a pro athlete, being learning the business side and learning how to make sure you stay training and making sure you stay competitive and all that too. So by me offering that to other athletes and making sure they understand that whole strategy, making sure that they could be able to, advance into their next, to the next level. And so
that's awesome.
Kind of do, you know,
cause Co, I mean, you were a professional athlete, and guys like me that watch it, we like to think it's all about the sport, but at the end of the day, it's a business, right?
It's a business, man.
And I mean, somebody, if you're not making money off of it, somebody else is. So you might as well be the one. Waiting for that fight purse or that payment for the fight, it's too cyclical, right? I mean, you get a check, but it's not going to pay the bills every day and the cost of training and all that. You got to sell yourself.
Yeah, the cost of training, man, people don't realize it takes, a few thousand dollars just for a 6 to 8 week camp, and not a lot of people will understand how much they got to budget out just to make sure they make it through that 6 to 8 weeks, So like, cause most athletes are like, I can't do it. I don't know how to do it. And so that's where people will quit they have to go up.
You win 10 grand in prize money, but it might've cost you 3, 4, 5 in that training in the camp.
Yeah, preparation. Yeah.
$1,000 to travel there. Then the government takes some tax out of it. You're like, I got $300.
Right.
Or something
right,
at the end, So
you're like, damn, where'd that all go? I need food, your food is most important.
Yeah.
And that's where is like most of it goes too, is like the food and the travel and the hotel, the stay. And so that's where I kinda I got to understand the whole business side and making sure, getting sponsors and be able to budget out for my training and everything. And so trying to teach these up-and-coming athletes that whole area is, it's kind of where I fell into. And so it's kind of a natural thing to what I do but like I said, if athletes out there are ever trying to want to become a real athlete, professional athlete, that's what they got to do. And also they got to take some risks, And so big risk, big reward.
For sure. Nice. If there's somebody, a young guy like you, that's at one of those crossroads, like you were back when you were, say, 18 or whatever, between the gang life and a positive path like you're on now, what advice can you give that person?
Man, I would just say, man, whatever they go through, all they got to do is just keep on going. There's always something out there to move forward to and to make sure you see, to make sure that you're going to keep, you're going to grow. It's just all about being consistent. If you're consistent about something positive in your life and you stay and you keep going, it's going to change no matter what, you're going to, and then you're going to start to get used to that downhill momentum, and then you start to pick yourself up, and then so it's always up and down, and it just you'll start to get used to it, and then you'll be so used to it to where you're just like, man, shit's just gonna be better and better later on, and so I say just keep going, because there's always light at the end of the road.
Awesome. Well, thanks for that, yep. Samson. Yep. Co, anything before we wrap up?
Nah, man. Thank you so much for, coming on and sharing your stories with our viewers and listeners, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much, Samson. Well, folks, that wraps up another episode of the C4 Podcast. Remember to like and follow. Check out our website, loudamericansports.com. A lot of really cool stuff there. With that, we're out. Thanks, everybody. The C4 Podcast is brought to you by the Lao American Sports Hall of Fame. Visit us on the web at loudamericansports.com, celebrating the first, inspiring the next.